time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dajon Hughes.
Good morning on this Saturday morning. Welcome into another episode of Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. I'm your host, Dajon Hughes, and I'm about to take you on a wild one-hour ride talking all things sports in the state of Michigan. Today, we're going to dive into some Lions, what happened with them last week, and what they got coming up this week in another big matchup. And then, of course, Michigan and Michigan State, what they have on the gridiron. A depressing weekend for Michigan college football fans last week, and what they have coming forward for them this week, and hopefully they can both turn it around. And then we'll touch on the end of the Tigers season before getting into the beginning of the Red Wings season, and then we'll have our picks like always. I am doing fantastic. I'm excited for another good weekend. Tons of sports going on. Obviously, Michigan Wolverines playing later today. Excited for that matchup, which is going to be here on WBCK. Hopefully, Michigan State can turn it around. And then we got NFL football, and then hockey's back rolling as well. So I am in a glorious state of excitement when it comes to sports. So I hope that you guys enjoy this sports-filled weekend as much as I'm going to. Now let's get to some not-so-great news. The Detroit Lions this past weekend took on the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. That game was here on WBCK, and it was a duel for a bit, and then it wasn't. Jared Goff went 23 of 29 for 203 yards and two tutties. Jahmyr Gibbs led the rushing with 65 yards on 17 carries. Jameson Williams, finally, the receiving leader, 6 receptions, 66 yards, and a touchdown. It's 11 yards a reception. Beautiful work there from Jameson. And then Muhammad had 1 sack, and Alex Anzalone led the team with 12 tackles, 7 solo. On the other side, though, Patrick Mahomes was almost flawless, 22 of 30, 257, 3 tutties. Isaiah Pacheco, 51 yards on the ground on 12 carries. Travis Kelce led the receptions, 6 receptions for 78 yards. Charles Omenehu had 1 sack, and Shamari Connor, 14 tackles, 10 of them solo. Overall in the game, yardage 355, 297 in favor of the Chiefs. Neither team had a turnover. First down 26-18 in favor of the Chiefs. Penalties, 4 penalties for the Lions for 38 yards. A whopping 0 penalties. The first time since late 2023 that a team had 0 penalties in a game for the Chiefs. Third downs, 5 of 11 for the Lions, 4 for 10 were the Chiefs. Fourth down, 0 for 2 for the Lions. Very uncharacteristic. And the Chiefs went 2 for 3. Red zone, that's where this game was truly won. Lions went 1 for 2, only making it to the red zone twice in this game. The Chiefs went 4 for 6. So while they missed 2 opportunities, they made it there 3 times, as many times as the Lions did, and cashed in 3 more times than the Lions did. That was the real difference maker in this game. 29-23, 30-37, possession in favor of the Chiefs. Looking at the scoring plays, Jake Bates, 28-yard field goal to open the game up. Then Xavier Worthy gets a 6-yard TD pass from Patrick Mahomes, but Bucker missed the PAT. Jameson Williams cashes in early in the second quarter, 22-yard pass from Jared Goff. Patrick Mahomes gets his 1-yard touchdown rush. Butker does make this extra point. Hollywood Brown, next guy to cash in. This is the beginning of the third quarter. 9-yard pass from Patrick Mahomes. Don't get a score again until the beginning of the fourth quarter from Sam Laporta. 4-yard touchdown pass from Jared Goff. Hollywood Brown answers again with a 3-yard touchdown pass. And then Harrison Butker finishes the game off with a field goal with 2:26 left in the fourth. But obviously, the thing we really got to talk about with this game, the post-game scuffle. You know, we saw earlier in the game, Juju Smith-Schuster lay a block. Brian Branch felt like it was in the back. It looked to have been in the back. It definitely was not a favorable play that I think anyone would want to experience. And he didn't do anything in the moment. And he spoke on this after the game, which we'll dive into in just a moment. But he did do something after the game. He walked right past Patrick Mahomes, who was trying to give him a hand dap, in a beeline for Juju Smith-Schuster, and he just muffed him right across the face, pushed his face mask all to the side. Juju Smith-Schuster ended up having a nosebleed, and then he went after him afterward while Juju Smith-Schuster was on the ground, and I believe he threw a punch or two. It was very hard to see from the angles that we got in the video. But either way, he's come down with a one-game suspension from his actions in the post game. And he said afterward that he was just frustrated with the fact that he believes he was blocked in the back and that he could have been hurt on that play. And it was right in front of the referee and nothing was done about it. He believes that he should have done something in the moment or within the confinements of the game. But he said he's really frustrated with guys getting away with things between the whistles right in front of referees and nothing's being done about it. So he decided to do something after the whistle, although he does say that he shouldn't have done that. It was wrong of him, and he understands the consequences of his actions. So what really was just encapsulating the day for the Lions. The Lions had an extremely tough day. I mean, you start with the field goal, and then you score the touchdown first. You're up 10-6 after you give up a touchdown, and they miss the extra point. Then they bounce back with a touchdown. Boom, they're back in front, and you don't see the lead again. Your third quarter was abysmal. You could barely move the ball. I'm actually going to go to all plays here and look at the third quarter. You had one drive in the third quarter where it started at the 25 after, or the 26 after you got a 25-yard return from Craig Reynolds. Then you get Jahmyr Gibbs up the middle for 5 yards. Jahmyr Gibbs off the right tackle for 2 yards. Okay, you're on, what is that, 3rd and 3? Cool. 4-yard pass from Jared Goff to Amon-Ra St. Brown. First down, no biggie. No huddle play, 15-yard pass to Jameson Williams. And then you get a 2-yard run from Jahmyr Gibbs, a negative 3-yard pass to Jahmyr Gibbs, a 1-yard pass to Jameson Williams, and then you punt the ball and you don't see the ball again in the third quarter. Kansas City scores one time in that third quarter, extends their lead to 10. You bounce back quickly in the fourth quarter, get an early touchdown, wasting only 4 minutes and 20 seconds of clock. Then you immediately give up a touchdown. You punt, give up a field goal, and then you end your play on fourth down where you don't convert, and that's the end of the game as they come in and kneel the ball. You got to be able to move the ball, and you got to be able to get teams off the field. Even in a punt, 6 plays, 3 minutes. 3 minutes. You got to get them off the field faster. You got to force them into passing downs where the clock is going to stop when they're incomplete. Force them out of bounds. Like you got to get the ball back, or you got to hold on to it longer and actually get into the red zone and make it count when you get there. That is when the Lions struggle, is when they're on the road, because they're 4-2 on the year. They're now 2-2 on the road. So both of their losses are on the road. And when they can't move the ball and get into the red zone while on the road, that is where they struggle the most. That is where it's hard for them to win games. That is where they've been unsuccessful. The main key is you have to score when you get into the red zone, especially when you're playing a game like the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bills, the Eagles, the Bucks. Those are teams that can score at will, and they will score bunches and bunches of points. You beat the Ravens earlier this year 38-30 because you scored almost every time you had the football. That is how you win an NFL football game against a high-caliber offense. You didn't do that on Sunday against the Kansas City Chiefs, and it really came back to bite you because you lost this game 30-17. This is one of two games this year where you didn't score more than 30 points and you lost. I mean, it kind of spells it out for you. Your offense is the true firepower of your team at the moment, so you have to lean on them. So when they're not having a good game, you're in for trouble. It's what they ran into this week. Kansas City wakes up their offense. They get back to 500, so they're feeling much better about their chances moving forward. Speaking of moving forward, the Detroit Lions have quite the test this week, which we won't talk a ton about right now in this segment because I am going to have this game in the pick segment later on in the show, but they're playing a red hot Tampa Bay Buccaneers team. They're 5-1 on the year. Their only loss is to the Philadelphia Eagles, and they're 3-0 on the road. This game is at Ford Field. The Lions are 2-0 at home. This is going to be two teams playing in their element. I do expect this game to be somewhat of a air raid. Both of these teams have amazing passing offenses, and they're going to throw the ball. Obviously, the Lions are going to mix in their run because they have Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. You can't ignore that two-headed monster that exists between those two. But at the same token, the passing offenses is what really drives these teams to success. You're going to see both of these teams use their passing offense to an insane ability. And like I said, we'll talk a ton more about this Buccaneers and Lions game when we get into our picks later on in the show. Coming up next, we're going to be talking Michigan State and Michigan and what happened last week that wasn't so good for these teams and what can happen this week to make it much better when we're back from the break with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for us to talk about some college football. Michigan State and Michigan on the docket. Don't want to ignore the Western Michigan Broncos, who are having a fantastic season. They have three losses all out of conference. They're 3-0 in conference play after demolishing Ball State last week, 42-0 on their homecoming. So hoping that they have continued success throughout their season. Going to be checking in on them throughout the season as they continue to play well. If they win that MAC championship, we're definitely going to be talking a lot about the Broncos. We're going to talk about Michigan State up first this week. They went on to play UCLA this week at Spartan Stadium, or last week, excuse me, at Spartan Stadium. And things did not turn out the way that Michigan State fans would have hoped. In fact, Aiden Chiles got hurt in this game. And we're going to talk about some stats before we dive deep into it. Backup Alessio Milivojevic, what a name, first off, had 100 yards on 8 of 18 for one touchdown. Mekhi Frazier, 12 carries for 58 yards. Nick Marsh continues to be that leading receiver for that Spartans team. 7 receptions, 77 yards, and a touchdown. Half a sack for Quindarius Dunnigan. And Jordan Hall led the team with 7 tackles, 4 of them solo. UCLA, on the other hand, had a far better day than Michigan State did. In fact, Nico Iamaliva had 180 yards on 16 of 24 for 3 touchdowns. Jalen Berger goes 89 yards for 12 carries and a touchdown. Mikey Matthews had 46 yards on 2 receptions. Devin Aipuyu had 1 sack, and Scooter Jackson goes 7 tackles, 4 of them solo. Team stats, UCLA outgained Michigan State 418 to 253. Michigan State had 1 turnover. First downs were 20-14 in favor of UCLA. 8 penalties for 60 yards for UCLA, though. Only 2 penalties for 14 yards for Michigan State. Michigan State goes 8 for 15 on third downs, while 6 for 13 for UCLA. Fourth down, though, different story. UCLA a perfect 3 for 3, while Michigan State goes a nothing burger out of 4 opportunities. UCLA had possession for 36 minutes and 24 seconds, while just 23-36 for Michigan State. Looking at the scoring plays, Michigan State opened things up with a 10-play, 59-yard drive that chewed up almost 5 minutes of clock for Aiden Childs' 2-yard run. And then things went downhill. Mateen Bakhani went for a 47-yard field goal toward the end of the first, and Jalen Berger capped off the first with a touchdown, putting UCLA up 10-7, and they did not look back once they had the lead. Jalen Berger with a 3-yard touchdown pass again at the beginning of the second quarter, and then Titus Makayu Atamala had a 12-yard touchdown reception. Javian Thomas, a 1-yard touchdown run at the beginning of the third. So it's 24-7 at halftime. And then Jalen Berger capped off the third quarter with a 13-yard touchdown reception, making it 38-7. And then Nick Marsh gets that touchdown pass at the beginning of the fourth to try and close things up. And then there were no more significant plays beyond that. Michigan State loses 38-13. UCLA covers the spread, or the over-under hits, and a plus 210 on the money line for UCLA. That means Michigan State drops to 3-3 on the year. They're 0-3 in the Big Ten, still searching for their first conference win, which is not really a place you want to be in the Big Ten going into the fourth week in conference play, especially when you look at the opponent that they have coming up, which we're going to dive into right now. Later today, 3:30 p.m. on Peacock, the Michigan State Spartans are traveling to take on a 6-0, 3-0 team in the Big Ten, number 3 Indiana Hoosiers at Memorial Stadium down in Bloomington, Indiana. The matchup predictor giving the Spartans only a 3.6% chance to come out with an upset. That's a 96.4% chance for Indiana to continue their perfect season. Indiana is a whopping 27.5-point favorites in this game. There isn't even a money line option for this game. They don't even think it's going to be close. The over-under sits currently at 50.5. Indiana led by Fernando Mendoza, Roman Hemby on the ground, and Elijah Surratt is their leading receiver. Isaiah Jones doing the thing in the sack game, 4.5 on the year. The leading tackle is Lewis Moore with 38. Obviously, Aiden Childs is questionable for this game. We do not know if he's going to play, so we'll find out if it's going to be him or Alessio that leads the Spartans into Memorial Stadium for this game. But it does not look like it's going to be any easy feat for them, regardless of who's playing at quarterback. Searching for your first Big Ten win on the road against the number 3 team in the country that will have a packed out Memorial Stadium is an uphill battle in itself, and then you're dealing with injuries and all other sorts of problems. So best of luck to Michigan State this weekend, but I am not going to be on the optimistic side as I was last week. I do think that they are going to suffer a loss this week. It's just a matter of how bad that loss will be and how they will be able to bounce back and where their mindset will be as they continue to move forward into the season. Capping this weekend off with the Michigan Wolverines, who last week took on the USC Trojans, and that game was here on WBCK. And let me tell you, I wish that y'all didn't have to listen to it, because I watched it and it hurt. Wanted to gouge my eyeballs out as a Michigan fan. They end up losing this game 31-13. Looking at the statistics, Jaden Maiva had a game. 25 of 32 for 265 yards, 2 TDs, and an interception. King Miller goes for 158 yards on the ground, 18 carries, and a TD. Mekhi Lemon, 93 yards on 9 receptions and a touchdown. Devin Tompkins had 2 sacks, and Eric Gentry led the team with 6 tackles, 5 of them being solo. Michigan, on the other hand, Bryce Underwood didn't have a terrible game. 15 of 24, 207 yards, 2 TDs, and an interception. The running game had quite the problem, though. Justice Haynes did get hurt, which could definitely damper his Heisman season, which he was on a roll. But Jordan Marshall led the rushing category, 14 carries, 68 yards. Andrew Marsh had his breakout receiving game, 8 receptions for 138 yards and a touchdown. Didn't get a sack the entire game, and Ernest Hausman led the team with 9 tackles, 7 of them being solo. 489, 316, the yard discrepancy in favor of USC. Turnovers were two apiece. 24 first downs and to 17 in favor of USC. Four penalties for Michigan for 37 yards. Three penalties for USC for 31 yards. USC 6 of 12 on third down. Michigan just 2 of 9. Fourth down, kind of the same story. USC goes 1 for 1. Michigan goes 0 for 2. USC had the ball for just over 33 minutes. Michigan just over 26. Looking at the scoring plays in this game, Jacoby Lane got things started with a 2-yard reception. That was all the first quarter spelled. It was 7-0 after one. Michigan ties it up with a Donovan McCulley 8-yard reception. And then Mekhi Lemon answers back before the end of the second quarter with a 12-yard reception. 14-7 at halftime. King Miller, the only person to score in the third quarter with a 15-yard touchdown run. And then you get the fourth quarter where Ryan Sayeri knocks in a 54-yard field goal. Michigan answers back. Andrew Marsh with a 69-yard touchdown reception from Bryce Underwood. And then Brian Jackson immediately comes back with a 29-yard touchdown run. And that spelled it out 31-13 as Michigan wasn't able to score again. That drops Michigan to 2-1 in the Big Ten, suffering just their first loss in the Big Ten. 4-2 on the year after their loss to Oklahoma earlier. 5-1 for USC, 3-1 in the Big Ten now as they continue to surge in the rankings. Michigan now behind Oregon and USC. Oregon suffered their first loss to Indiana. The top of the conference right now, Indiana and Ohio State, who are both 3-0 and 6-0. Ohio State, the number one team in the country. Indiana, number three. So the Big Ten continuing to have dominance, not only in the conference, but throughout the country as well. Michigan also has a matchup for themselves this weekend, a team that they've become quite familiar with playing over the last couple of years, the Washington Huskies. The Huskies are 5-1 on the year, 2-1 on the Big Ten. That game is the big noon kickoff on Fox. It will be here on WBCK as well. 4-2 Michigan. Obviously, they're 2-1 in the Big Ten. Michigan is 4.5-point favorites going into this game. Over-under sits at 50.5, and they're negative 195 in the money line. But those Huskies are not far behind at plus 165. This game is at the Big House Michigan Stadium over in Ann Arbor. Michigan has a 67.7% chance to win in comparison to 32.3% for Washington on the matchup predictor. Looking at Washington stats for the year, Damon Williams Jr., a true dual threat quarterback, has 117 completions on 158 attempts, 1,628 passing yards for 10 touchdowns and an interception. Jonah Coleman, 518 rushing yards on 96 carries and 11 touchdowns. Denzel Boston has 444 receiving yards on 30 receptions and 6 touchdowns. Jacob Lane leads with 2.5 sacks, and Alex McLaughlin has 42 tackles on the year. Washington's last five games look very impressive. Took down UC Davis 70-10. Took down Washington State for the Apple Cup 59-24. Ohio State, their only loss so far in the year and the conference, 24-6. They took down Maryland on the road 24-20 and then came back home to handle business against Rutgers 38-19. Obviously, we have the two losses for Michigan to USC and OU. And then in between, they have wins over CMU, Nebraska, and Wisconsin. This game in its own will be fun, but I'm going to take Michigan to win this one. We'll be back to talk Tigers and the Red Wings after our break with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. We're going to talk about the end of the Tigers season. It unfortunately came to an end last Friday night as the Tigers lost to the Seattle Mariners 3-2 in game 5 in 15 innings. It was an extremely long game, and it was one that was heartbreaking as Polanco hit the winning single in the 15th inning as the Mariners beat the Tigers to advance to the ALCS. And I mean, what a game it was. Going back, no score in the first inning. Seattle goes up early, 1-0 in the second. No score in the third, no score in the fourth, no score in the fifth. Two runs from the Tigers in the sixth. Another run to tie it up in the seventh. Nothing in the eighth, nothing in the ninth, nothing in the 10th, nothing in the 11th, nothing in the 12th, nothing in the 13th, nothing in the 14th. And then that base knock from Polanco sends that runner home. Eight hits apiece, two errors from the Tigers kind of spelled the game out. I mean, Cary Carpenter, can we talk about the guy? He had a game. 4 for 5, one run, one homer, two RBIs, hits .281 on the game. Carpenter reached on the infield single to shortstop in the first, and then he singled to right in the third, homered to center, and Baez came around to score as well in the sixth. He got walked in the eighth. He singled to center in the 11th. He was intentionally walked in the 12th. Baez went to second, and then Carpenter struck out swinging at in the top of the 15th. Gleyber Torres goes 0 for 6. Riley Green 0 for 6. Spencer Torkelson 0 for 6. Kobe Keith 0 for 5. Zach McKinstry 1 for 6. Dingler 2 for 6. Meadows 0 for 5. Javi Baez 1 for 6. It's not going to help. Even if you do get Skubal, who goes 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned run, and 13 strikeouts. 13 strikeouts. Retired 14 straight batters, 13 of them being strikeouts. What more can you ask from your ace if you can't bat runs in to help them out? It does not matter. But at the end of the day, the Tigers were the best team in baseball for a very long time this season. An extremely long time this season. And then they were able to pull it off even after crumbling at the end of the season to get to the playoffs. And then an electric AL wildcard series against the Cleveland Guardians, which they were able to win an awesome winner-take-all game 3. And then they pushed the Seattle Mariners to the absolute brink in this five-game ALDS series. Had a lead, too, throughout this series. Had a chance to capitalize and just end this thing, and they couldn't quite do it. And then we go into what is the pure insanity that postseason baseball is about with the 15-inning game five that eventually the Mariners would win as they go on to play the Blue Jays in the championship series. You can't be too faulty of the Tigers. There were obviously some things that could have gone so much better than they went. But at the end of the day, the Tigers gave us a phenomenal season. And now all we can ask is that they lock up the most important part of this team and Tarek Skubal. You got to pay him the money he wants. Reportedly, there's a discrepancy of $250 million one way or the other that's been reported. It is an apparent thing. There's no for sure, all alleged. We'll find out for sure what's going on with that contract stuff as it continues to come out. But as long as they lock up Tarek Skubal to be, I don't know, a Tiger for life, then this team, to me, is going to be okay. But it's only a matter of time and how free agency plays out. But I think this Tigers team, which is extremely young, some people forget, once they put it all together and if they're able to stay close-knit and everybody gets paid the money they're deserved, this team could win some World Series down the line. You just got to give them time to develop as the young baseball players that they are. But now that that Tiger series is over, there's not too much left for us to talk about. So it's time to pivot to the next Detroit sports that are going to be popping off. We won't talk much about the Pistons because their season does not start for a little while. Their regular season starts on the 22nd, so almost more than a week. So their first game is against the Bulls on the 22nd at 8 p.m. They look good so far in the preseason. Jaden Ivey did have a procedure, so he will be out to start the year. But there are new pieces on this team that should slot in and fit well. And Cade Cunningham is continuing to look like the all-star that he was last year. He is one of the best point guards, if not the best point guard in the Eastern Conference. Looking forward to seeing if that turns out to be true as they head into the regular season. They went 2-2 in the preseason, lost to the Cavs and lost to the Bucks, but they were able to beat the Grizzlies and the Wizards. So we'll be keeping our eyes on that Bulls game, and we'll be definitely talking about the Pistons when we get into next week, as they will be into their regular season. A team that is into their regular season, that does play their home games in Little Caesars Arena, are the Detroit Red Wings. They started off the season on a bumpy road, and it was just one game. They lost to the Canadiens 5-1. Just it was really bad for them all around. But since then, they have dominated. I repeat, they have dominated. They bounced back in their second game that same weekend, took care of the Maple Leafs 6-3, and then they had the Maple Leafs again. First off, first two games were at Little Caesars Arena. They're 1-1 at home so far, and where we are in the schedule. And then they went on the road for the first time to play the Maple Leafs again, took care of business as well, 3-2 there. They get another home game against the Panthers two nights ago, as you're listening to this on Saturday, and they won 4-1 against the reigning Stanley Cup champions, the Florida Panthers. And then they're welcoming in a team that is all too familiar with the general manager, Stevie Yzerman, the Tampa Bay Lightning. Later tonight, 7 p.m., the game will be on ESPN+. I cannot guarantee you that it will not be blacked out. So don't be upset at me if you cannot watch the game. Currently, the Lightning are -150 on the money line, a +130 for the Red Wings, though. A 6.5-point spread, and the Lightning are 1.5-point favorites. The Lightning are 1-2-1 on the year. They're 1-0-1 on the road. Red Wings 3-1-0. They're 2-1-0 at home. Vasilevskiy will most likely be in net. Well, I don't know though, because Johansson has started well for them. He's got their one win on the year. Vasilevskiy has their two losses and an overtime loss as well. Two losses, one of them being an overtime loss. Cam Talbot, three wins for the Red Wings so far. Gibson, the one loss for the Red Wings, giving up 8 goals in that game. Or he has an 8 goal against average in his time. Cam Talbot, just a 1.78 goals against average. 9.32 save percentage for Cam Talbot. Alex DeBrincat leading the Red Wings in points with 6. They're all assists. Braden Point has 5 points, 2 goals, 3 assists. He also leads them in goals, two of them with 2. He has 1 power play goal on 7 shots. Mason Appleton leading the Red Wings with 3 goals. No power play goals, but he has 7 shots on the year as well. Jake Guentzel leads on assists with 4 assists, 1 on the power plays, -1 on his plus minus. DeBrincat obviously leads with those 6 assists. He has 2 on the power play, and he's 0 even on his plus minus. Lucas Raymond is day-to-day. He may or may not play for the Red Wings this weekend. But, yeah, we'll be touching in on the Red Wings as they continue to play at Little Caesars Arena and elsewhere. Started off to a good start so far. When we come back from the break, it'll be all about our picks with more Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
.3 WBCK.
Welcome back into Mid-Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for our picks. Now, last week, although it didn't go exactly the way I would have liked due to just one team losing, really, it turned out pretty well. Obviously, Michigan dropped their game against USC. Oregon goes down in a crazy matchup to Indiana, 30-20, so that was an amazing game to watch as well. Those are my two losses, as Bama took down Mizzou with no problems. Ohio State handled Illinois, And then the Bucks were able to squeeze out a victory against the 49ers. And Oliveira, I mean, went to work in the octagon against Gamrot. So at 4-2, that bumps me up to 30-18 on this current season. So looking to keep that momentum rolling, have another very positive week this week as we have five college football games, and we know how unpredictable college football games can be. It can go one way, and then within a few minutes, it's definitely going the all other way. So this weekend could be absolute chaos, or it could be absolute chalk. We're going to find out at the end of tonight for sure. And then we have the Buccaneers and Lions game coming up on Monday night. So this will span the entire weekend plus some before I find out just how good of a week I had. We're going to start down south in the SEC. The Tennessee Volunteers are the number 11 team in the country. 5-1 on the year. They are 2-1 in the SEC. They're taking on the number 6 ranked Alabama Crimson Tide, who are 5-1 on the year. They're 3-0 in the SEC. This game is at 7:30 p.m. tonight on ABC. Tennessee, a 27.2% chance to come out victorious. 72.8% for Alabama on the matchup predictor. This game is at Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Alabama's an 8.5-point favorite. The over-under currently sits at 59.5. Negative 320 on the money line for Bama. A plus 260 for the Volunteers. Joey Aguilar, Deshaun Bishop, Chris Brazell, and crew will look to take on Ty Simpson, Jam Miller, and Jeremy Bernard. Bama 5-0 in their last five. Their first loss and only loss of the year was to Florida State at the beginning of the year. Took down Georgia 24-21. Meanwhile, Tennessee needed overtime to lose to Georgia 44-41 in what was a miraculous game. So by no means does the transitive property even exist here, for the simple fact that without a few mistakes, Tennessee is also undefeated 6-0, and they're 3-0 in the SEC. And this is a totally different ball game. But it doesn't change anything because this game is still wide open. Tennessee can come out and continue to show just how high-powered their offense is. They got 57 tackles from their leading tackler, and they have 4 sacks from one of their defensive linemen. So they can also turn up the pressure on the defensive end. By no means is this game a gimme for the Alabama Crimson Tide, but I do have a certain sense of trust in Alabama at this moment, even with Ty Simpson at the helm. There are 3 undefeated teams in conference play for the SEC, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Alabama. I don't want Alabama to, I don't think Alabama will quite lose just yet. I think it's going to take a little bit deeper in the season before we see Bama have a hiccup. Not meaning that this game will be even close to that 8.5 spread that they're talking about. This could be a 3-point game, but I'm going to take Bama to win it because I'm just crazy like that. Maybe it's a little bit of Jacob rubbing off on me over time. Our next game is a non-conference bout because one of these teams is not in a conference. The USC Trojans, who are now the 20th ranked team in the country, are 5-1 on the year, taking on the 13th ranked Notre Dame Fighting Irish, 4-2 on the year. This game is on NBC and Peacock, 7:30 p.m. later tonight. 68.9% chance for the Irish, 31.1% for the Trojans. 9.5-point favorites are Notre Dame, 60.5 on the over-under, plus 270 for the Trojans, negative 340 on that money line for Notre Dame. CJ Carr, 105 for 158, 1,622 yards, 13 tutties, 3 interceptions on the year. Jeremiah Love continues to do his thing on the ground, 530 yards, 100 carries, 8 TDs. Jordan Faison, 376 yards, 29 receptions, 2 TDs. Boubacar Traoré, 5.5 sacks, and Derek Bowen has 31 tackles. We know about Maiva, Wayman Jordan, Makai Lemon, and crew. Notre Dame in their last 5 had their tough loss to Texas A&M by 1 to open up the year. Or earlier in the year, excuse me, they also had another loss before that. Purdue, 56-30. Arkansas, 56-13. Boise, 28-7. North Carolina State, 36-7. Seems like Notre Dame has found their groove. Obviously, we know how well USC is playing. They're one blemish to Illinois by 2 points. With this game being at Notre Dame Stadium in Notre Dame, Indiana, South Bend, whatever you want to call it, that has me leaning toward Notre Dame, and I can't give you a direct reason why. Other than that, this game is in South Bend. So I'm going to give Notre Dame that home advantage, although things could come crashing and burning. Our next game is back in the SEC. Shocker. LSU Tigers, 5-1, 2-1 in the SEC, 10th ranked team in the country. Take on the Vanderbilt Commodores, 5-1, 1-1 in the SEC, 17th ranked team in the country. This game is at noon on ABC. It is at First Bank Stadium in Nashville. 60.7% chance for Vanderbilt, 39.3% chance for LSU. 2.5-point favorites are the Commodores, 48.5 on the over-under. -140 for Vanderbilt, +120 for the Tigers on the money line. Diego Pavia has continued to lead Vandy on the ground and in the air. Stowers doing great in the receiving category. Garrett Nussmeier continues to be a great quarterback. Caden Durham on the ground leading the Tigers, and Aaron Anderson, their leading receiver. They have one blemish on their record to Ole Miss, 24-19. Obviously, Vanderbilt has that loss last week to Alabama. As much as Vandy is coming off that loss and they're going to be hyped up, LSU is coming off a big win over South Carolina. This is kind of a trap game for LSU and kind of a big game for Vanderbilt to springboard themselves. So I'm going to go on the wild side of things here. I'm going to take Vandy to win this home game, boost themselves up the ladder, and not only the SEC, but also in the country, in the national rankings, and try and find themselves in the playoff for the first time ever and really making a spark with Vanderbilt football. We're going to go to another game in the SEC. The fifth-ranked Ole Miss Rebels, 6-0 in the year, 3-0 in the SEC, taking on the ninth-ranked team in the country, Georgia Bulldogs, 5-1, 3-1 in the SEC. This is a 3:30 p.m. game on ABC. 69.7% chance for the Bulldogs, 30.3% chance for Ole Miss. This game is in Athens, Georgia at Sanford Stadium. This is a big road test for the fifth-ranked Rebels. They have an opportunity to take another step in the crucial SEC showdown. Georgia's 7.5-point favorites, 57.5 on the over or on the over/under, and -280 for Georgia, but a +230 for Ole Miss. Trinidad Chambliss from right up the road, US 131, out of Forest Hills Northern, played some time at Ferris State football and basketball before transferring to Ole Miss, has been great while getting help from Kawan Lacey and Harrison Wallace III. Garrick Stockton has Chauncey Bowens and Colby Young to help him out as well. Ole Miss, obviously no blemishes on their record, looking to keep that record spotless. Georgia has the 1 3-point loss to Alabama in what was a crazy game. I may be crazy as well because I'm going to go with the home state kid. I think Trinidad Chambliss didn't just go to Ole Miss and didn't just win the job by happenstance. He's continuing to prove why he's as good as he has been. So you already know what the plan is going to be now. I'm going to rock with Ole Miss to go into Sanford Stadium and come out victorious. So I'm going to take Ole Miss in that game. That's going to bump us up to our last college football game of the weekend. Utah Utes, they're 5-1, 2-1 in the Big 12, 23rd ranked team in the country, taking on the BYU Cougars, who are 15th ranked team in the country, 6-0 on the year. They're 3-0 in the Big 12. This is an 8 p.m. game on Fox later tonight. A 50.6% chance for BYU, a 49.4% chance for Utah. This game is about as 50-50 as it can get. 3.5-point favorites are Utah. 49.5 sits on the over-under. -165 for Utah, +140 for BYU. Devin Dampier continues to be a dual-threat quarterback monster for the Utes. Ryan Davis, their leading receiver. Bear Bachmeier, 91-144 for 1,220 yards, 8 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. LJ Martin goes 652 yards for on 101 carries and four touchdowns. Chase Roberts has 22 receptions, 420 yards, and three touchdowns to lead BYU. Jack Kelly has four sacks to lead the Cougars, and Sayel Acera has 31 tackles. Last five for BYU, obviously spotless. They had a 33-27 double overtime victory over Arizona in what was one of the most wild games of last weekend. West Virginia, they took down with no problem, took care of Colorado by three, beat East Carolina, and took care of Stanford 27-3. Utah took care of Arizona State and WVU with no problems, 42-10, 48-14. Had a serious loss to Texas Tech, 34-10. Lost to Wyoming, beat Wyoming 31-6 and beat Cal Poly 63-9. Although Utah's had a great season so far, I got to rock with the BYU Cougars. Our last game of the week, the Buccaneers taking on the Lions. We talked a little bit about this game earlier. 62.1% chance for the Lions, 37.6% chance for the Bucs. And while I love what the Bucs have done so far this year, they do have some injuries they are working through, and Aleem McNeil might be back for this game. Brian Branch obviously out with the suspension. And after the Lions come off the tough loss, they haven't lost two games in a row since 2023, and I don't think that starts this weekend. Give me the Lions to win on Monday Night Football. That gives me Bama, Notre Dame, Vandy, Ole Miss, BYU, and the Lions. Coming up this weekend, we got Michigan football. Pre-game starts as soon as I'm done here on WBCK. And then tomorrow, we have Sunday Night Football coming up. And then on Monday, we got the Monday Night Football games with Houston and Seattle, and then I believe the Buccaneers and Lions game. Y'all have a great weekend. I'll be doing the same. We'll be back next week with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.